I'm Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio with a pop-up podcast. I'm here with Howie Hawkins. We're sitting in the Senate lobby in these beautiful deep velvet couches to talk about Howie's third time running for governor. Third time, right?
Right. 2010, 2014, and this year.
Okay. So why are you doing it?
Our slogans demand more. I think we got reforms out of Governor Cuomo by getting 5% of the vote in 2014. We were talking about a ban on fracking, paid family leave, $15 minimum wage, tuition-free higher education. The first two we got, the second two he talks about, we really haven't got there yet. But I think we made a difference. Like in 2010, we were running on a ban on fracking and when the environmental movement wasn't there yet. After that campaign, that became what everybody had on their petition, and the movement was dogging Cuomo to get a fracking ban for the next 4 years.
So I want to ask you to go over those issues sort of one by one. How New York would be different if the Green Party were in charge? And the first one you mentioned was single-payer health care, right? How would that be financed?
Well, the bill has a progressive tax proposal. It's a progressive payroll tax plus a tax on so-called unearned income, interest, rent, capital gains. And that's where the money would come from. Also, the federal money now going into Medicare and Medicaid would be folded into the single public payer. And it would be less costly to the people of New York than we now pay for the taxes for Medicare and Medicaid, plus premiums, copays, deductibles, and those fees for what wasn't covered you pay out of pocket.
Do wealthy people in New York pay enough taxes?
Not the 1%. Their tax bracket since the 70s was cut in half. It was 15% in the 70s. Now the top bracket is 8.82%. And that's that millionaire surcharge that Governor Cuomo is hesitating to extend. And the bottom bracket was doubled from 2% to 4%. We need to go back to a more progressive tax structure. The top 1% in this state, their share of income was 12% of all income in 1980. Today it's 31%. That's $375 billion going to 90,000 taxpayers, $4.5 million income on average each. If they paid 10% more, we'd have $37.5 billion more to put into fixing NYCHA, the MTA, our infrastructure upstate, fully funding the schools, tuition-free college. There are a lot of things that we need. And, yes, they should go back to paying the kind of taxes they used to.
But what about all the arguments made by Governor Cuomo and some others that the rich are going to leave, they're going to go live in Florida, and then we won't get any money from them?
Well, the academic studies, a big one by Stanford last year, said that the rich don't move to get lower top marginal income tax rates. There was another study in 2009 that showed the New Jersey rate, which is more than double the Pennsylvania rate, doesn't have millionaires moving over to Bucks County from New Jersey to get the lower marginal highest rate. And then you get people like Golisano. That's when they talk about going to Florida. He's running around the state complaining about his property taxes. Come on.
And that's right. Tom Golisano, who did run for governor about a decade ago.
Right. And he spent
Rochester business.
He had $90 million, and he couldn't spend it all because he ran out of billboards and advertising time. And he barely got more percentage than we did with a little, you know, what did we raise, $185,000 in 2014. So I don't think his program appealed to the people. And, you know, I just don't have sympathy for extremely rich people complaining about paying their taxes.
Environmental changes. What are your priorities?
I have two. One is lead. We have, in my city, is the highest lead in children in their blood of any state in the country, 40%. Have more than the federal standard of 5 micrograms per deciliter. It's also 40% just behind us in Buffalo. It's 37% in one of the zip codes in Utica.
And what is that from? Is that from the lead paint from past decades?
Yes, it's primarily the lead paint. It's 47 years since the Surgeon General issued an urgent warning to test the children, treat them if they're poisoned, and remediate the source.
And that's still there.
It's still there. We have not prioritized it. I think it's criminal neglect by both major parties that they haven't solved this problem, which is not rocket science. It's very, we know what to do. And we're permanently disabling children. It affects their neurological development, their motor skills, their intellectual capacity, their emotions and behaviors. I mean, this is something we can do, and I would make a top priority. The other is we have a climate emergency, and we have a bill called the New York Off Fossil Fuels Bill, which is put into law what we've been demanding all three campaigns, 100% clean energy by 2030. And, you know, Mark Dunley, our comptroller candidate, helped draft that legislation. I think the 5% we got in 2014 made the legislators take us seriously. So we've got a bill, and that's my second priority, because if we don't deal with the climate crisis, all bets are off on every other issue.
$15 minimum wage. We don't really have one in New York, right?
No, it's 1040 upstate. If I'm not governor, I can go back to UPS. I'm technically retired, but to cut my pension 20% because of a bipartisan change to the federal law that used to protect our earned benefits, I lose my seniority. I will be working at 1040 an hour during peak season at UPS.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo does talk about how New York has a $15 minimum wage.
Yeah, he said Amazon followed her lead. And my response was, where's my $15 minimum wage, Governor? We don't have it. It gets to $12.50 in 2021, and then they're going to take another look at it. It'll still be a poverty wage. I've been calling for $20 an hour by 2020, indexed to inflation and productivity. Productivity, that's the amount of product we produce per hour of work. And it has been going up and up, but the wages stayed stagnant. So all that extra value is going to the 1%.
Because upstate New York, where you live, it will be $15. Actually, it's only going up to $13, right, in the current plan. And that's by what, 2022?
$12.50 by 2021.
Yeah.
We don't even get to 13 under the current plan.
Yeah. You know, we're hearing a lot about the Democratic socialists in this election cycle. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, says that she's a Democratic socialist. It seems like a lot of people are talking about how that's how they view themselves. And what I'm wondering is how are the Greens different from Democratic socialists, or is there a difference?
Well, I think we really are Democratic socialists. The people you're talking about are small s socialists, maybe in quotation marks, Democrats with a capital D. And their programs are really the old-fashioned liberalism of the New Deal, which we support. But you can't secure those reforms because under capitalism, wealth concentrates, and that concentrated wealth translates into concentrated political power. And so the 1% can roll back those New Deal-type reforms, which they've been doing since the 1970s, both here and in Europe. So we want the economic democracy of social ownership of major means of production, cooperatives in the private sector, public enterprises democratic, not like NYCHA, where the tenants don't have a say, or the New York Power Authority, where the governor appoints it and does a lot of subsidies to corporations. We want democratic public enterprises. And with that economic democracy, public preferences can then translate into public policy because the rich won't be dominating the political process.
So New York would be really, really different if you were governor.
Yeah, it would be a lot more equitable. We would be really solving problems instead of talking about them and claiming we're so progressive when, we're actually behind a lot of other states, whether it's marijuana legalization, a public bank that could bypass Wall Street and finance public infrastructure and private business at lower cost. There are so many things we could do. I think a lot of these things, the majority of people already are for, from single payer to some of these reforms that the Senate has blocked, like the Dreamers bill, the codification of Roe v. Wade in our penal code.
Into state law, yeah. You're still a union member, right? You're still a member of the Teamsters?
I've got a withdrawal card. I'm technically retired at the moment.
Oh, okay. But you were for a long time and you were involved. What I wanted to ask you about was just the state of unions in New York State. As you know, Governor Cuomo really got a lot of help from the unions to win his primary in September over Cynthia Nixon. Just wondering what your thoughts are on what unions are doing right now in New York, and do they need to improve? Are they doing the right thing?
I think progressives need to understand the class structure of a corporate society, whether you're talking about unions and other nonprofits, government sector, or private business. You have three main classes: the top managers, the professional managerial class that supervises and coordinates things, and then the people that do the work. And in our unions, our officials, the staff, tend to be in that professional managerial class. And so while it's a transactional deal with Cuomo to get some benefits for your union is the way the professional managerial class looks at it, it's not always good for the workers. And, the classic example for me is Fannie Lou Hamer. You know, Robert Moses, Harvard mathematician, ran Freedom Summer, and then they formed the Freedom Democratic Party. And everybody thought he'd take the leadership. He said, no, you're going to elect somebody. And they elected this sharecropper. And when the compromise is offered that you don't get the vote, you get two token seats, and the segregationists are going to get seated from Mississippi. Fannie Lou Hamer said, we didn't do all this work for that. And she was in a position where she wasn't going to sell out because they didn't have anything anyway. Whereas the middle-class leadership in that movement, at that time, at first, Martin Luther King, Bayard Rustin, Philip Randolph, they all said, take the deal, it's progress. And, you know, so workers, so what we need is more democracy in our unions, and they need to be, acting on the basis of class solidarity. For example, the difference between private and public sector unions. When Cuomo was going after the public sector pensions and instituted the sixth tier.
Yeah, he had a major fight with them during early his term. Yeah.
Well, my Teamsters union was silent about that. And now that my pension's been cut and so forth, the public unions, you know, haven't spoken out about that.
So they don't really stick together.
No, they're all like separate fiefdoms, which is not the idea of a labor movement in its best form. And so, you know, basically rank and file people, we need to get our unions back.
This week, the Working Families Party scrapped Cynthia Nixon from the ticket. She wanted to be scrapped after she lost the primary, and they have decided to endorse Andrew Cuomo. Now, what you said in response to that, you weren't terribly happy with that. You said that it shows that the Working Families Party is a political club firmly entrenched in the corporate-dominated Democratic Party.
Yeah, I think you need to look at the results, not the rhetoric from the Working Families Party. And they've now endorsed Cuomo three times, a quintessential corporate Democrat. And, you know, why they made that decision, it goes back to what I was talking about. It was the, you know, professional staffs of the community organizations. You know, Jonathan Weston got quoted as like, Molinaro would be terrible, but I kind of saw a bubble quote above that saying, and the UFT is going to pull our funding and we'll be defunct for New York Communities for Change, who he works for. So they're kind of caught in this transaction. They're not really dependent on the funding from the grassroots. They're dependent on other institutions that make them compromise their politics. And if we're going to have a real progressive movement that sticks to the progressive position come hell or high water, whatever the obstacles are, we need to have our own party.
Do you expect to gain some votes from former Cynthia Nixon supporters?
Absolutely. I think there's 500,000 voters wanted a more progressive option than Cuomo. Cynthia Nixon's not on the ballot. We are, and we're the vote they should cast.
What about some of your other opponents? Stephanie Miner, the former mayor of Syracuse, is running. You know her from, because you're both from the same town. What do you think of her campaign?
Well, I think she and the movement behind her, the Serve America movement, are trying to do the corporate military agenda more competently than the Democrats or Republicans. I think these are never Trump Republicans and centrist conservative Democrats who just think they're more competent than the Republicans or the Democrats who are divided between their Sanders wing and their corporate wing. And, you know, her record in Syracuse was fiscal conservatism. You know, she signed on to the New York Conference of Mayors austerity plan right after the Great Recession, which Cuomo was also advocating with his new New York agenda at that time. She gentrified downtown very consciously, subsidies for high-end condos. They closed the senior center down there, moved the bus station out, basically converted the buildings in which low-income people were living. The median income in the district went from $20,000 to $100,000 in 10 years. So gentrification. She gave the Inner Harbor development, it's all upscale. She gave it to core development. So she exacerbated the high level of class and race segregation we already have in the city.
But you don't think things like that could benefit poorer people? You know, maybe there'd be more jobs in the city?
That was sort of the trickle-down theory of, what did they call them, the creative class? They'll come in, spend money. The guy that formulated that, Mr. Florida, I forget his first name, has since repudiated that because he's looked at the results and it hasn't happened. It's led to gentrification, but it doesn't spread out. I mean, if you're going to help poor people, help them directly. Don't give it to the rich people. I mean, we've been doing that for decades, and wealth and income has polarized for over those decades.
What about Larry Sharp, the Libertarian candidate? I find sometimes that people that are kind of maybe on the right and on the left kind of meet around the back in some of their views. Do you have any common ground with the Libertarians?
Yeah, we do, on marijuana legalization, on reforming criminal justice so it's fair to people that are accused. And, I finally had a chance to talk with him at the Global Citizens Festival last weekend. And, you know, we're both former Marines. We got that in common. We disagree on the economics. I mean, he's a conservative libertarian and pretty close to Molinaro in a lot of respects. So we disagree on that. But he deserves a spot. The libertarians are, you know, a current in American politics. And he deserves to be on the debate stage along with all the ballot qualified candidates.
And finally, you got 5% in 2014, right, you said. So with that amount of the vote, like, how can you ever see yourself beyond just a protest vote?
Well, we've elected people to local offices, and now the next step is the bigger cities and then state legislature and Congress, and we just got to climb the ladder. And 5%, if you look at historically for independent parties on the left, there's only two races, 1918 and 1920 for governor, where they got 5.6 and 5.7%. Those were the socialists. And our third party history goes back to the Anti-Slavery Liberty Party in the 1840s and the Working Men's Party in the 1830s. So that was significant. I think Cuomo had to pay attention. He couldn't take our vote for granted. So you can have influence without winning the office, and that's what we intend to do.
Okay, Howie Hawkins, thanks so much for your time. I'm Karen DeWitt.